Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
This is the podcast done on no fucking sleep whatsoever, thanks to the broken air conditioner in my house and hot as balls. But I'm conscious, I'm up, I'm rolling. I'm Dan Nalen, and this is Sound Waves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and it is one of the oldest independent publications in the entire United States, distributing free monthly issues on action sports, art, music, and subculture, and it's available every place cool in Salt Lake City and beyond. In this episode, we have a whole lot of Provo going on. We talk to the good people of the Black Sheep Cafe, the proprietors of the Echo Theater, and the Velour Live Music Gallery. The Black Sheep Cafe, for any of you who have not made the trip down to Provo to check it out, is an excellent place serving Native American cuisine and specialty foods. It opened just over a year ago in early 2012 and offers lunch and dinner menu at all different kinds of hours and a lot of southwestern delicacies you just won't find anywhere else. It is delicious, let me tell you. I've been there. I can vouch for that. Slug writer Alex Springer sat down with the founder of the place, Blue Adams, right here in the Soundwave studio to talk about the restaurant.
How did the restaurant itself get started? Can you tell a little bit about that?
The restaurant was an idea I had about 9-10 years ago now. I used to travel around to powwows and fairs, and I had a Navajo taco stand. Since I can remember, my family's been doing something in that arena. I decided I wanted to be in the restaurant business after I graduated with my associate's degree for business management. I didn't realize at the time how hard it would be. But it's been a pretty good adventure. Right now, I enjoy using it as a platform to promote my culture through food and through art. So it's been pretty fun.
So you talked a little bit about kind of growing up as far as like on a reservation, that kind of thing. How else has your family influenced like your approach to the restaurant?
Well, my family, they have always owned businesses since I can remember. My dad, specifically, he is a silversmith, has been silversmithing for almost 50 years. He went to the Institute of American Indian Arts in Santa Fe, where he met my mother, who's also an artist. She does pottery and painting. She's actually been, what's interesting about my mom is that she has pottery in the American Smithsonian. She has pottery in the Mint Gallery in North Carolina, pottery all over the world in private collection and in museums, but she doesn't pursue it. Mm-hmm. Her pieces were picked up by collectors, and that's the extent of her pursuing that part of her life. But my father also has won numerous awards at juried shows, Park City, 5 years, Best of State, Utah. But they're not actively pursuing. It's almost like it's a hobby. But I've been around that growing up, that entrepreneurship from my parents. And we owned a theater in Window Rock, Arizona, the Navajo Nation. And that's kind of where I got the bug working for myself and creating things that weren't necessarily there, because on the reservation, there isn't a lot of economic opportunity. There isn't a lot of opportunity in any sense.
Right.
And growing up as a teenager, I created what I wanted, how I wanted things to be. I was a skateboarder. There are no real roads down there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we went as far as to create skateboarding competitions by going to places like Home Depot and getting them to donate the wood. And we built the ramps, and we had the kind of the community to come together and do things that otherwise we would have no chance of doing. We just created our environment, basically. As far as restaurant, I never really saw Native American restaurants. I knew there was a market for it. I knew I had a great idea, and with the help of my brother, who's the executive chef, we were able to create just a great contemporary Native American restaurant using traditional recipes, traditional ingredients.
Thank you. Can you talk a little bit about what Black Sheep is known for, like what kind of food you are known for making or what kind of food you specialize in?
We took the concept of what we call res food, specifically the Southwest reservations where you have fry bread and Navajo tortillas, which is the Nanascati or the Apache racket bread. And we put a more modern flair on them with the Black Sheep burger that's on the Nanascati, which is the Navajo flatbread, the Navajo tacos. We took these traditional ingredients and these recipes that we've been using for hundreds, some of them thousands of years, the blue corn, we modernized them. And most of that is done through chef's abilities with using French and Italian techniques. He was in an Italian kitchen before he came to us. So the cooking processes are different. Say the cooking the pork takes 4 to 6 hours just to get it to where it's cooked. And then you add the chili sauces, and all the chilies are fire roasted. All the peppers are fire roasted and pureed for our sauces. So we're not doing anything from cans. Everything's from scratch. The fry bread recipe is my mom's famous fry bread recipe that she protects.
And it's delicious. Like, I still kind of think about it sometimes when I'm like, I do. I'm kind of thinking, how do you get something like that? How do you make something like that? Because it is. I've never tasted anything like it. It's extremely good.
and that's what it is. It's her technique. It's her recipe. It's everything that she created through her lifetime. She's in her 70s now, and we're finding it actually pretty difficult to teach people how to make it the way she makes it. So,
mm-hmm. Well, I guess in that way, it's kind of cool because it's, in a way, it's like, because like you said, this is something that's always intrigued me about it, is you're using recipes that are like thousands of years old. It's a cool way to preserve, I think, that history. It's just through food. I think it's
right.
Great.
Yeah. What people need to understand is most, like, you think about Italian cuisine. You think about traditional Italian cuisine. It all involves tomatoes. That was something that was cultivated in the Southwest. We were in trade even before the Europeans came. Of course, we were in trade. So I think what they're saying is the Native American, especially the Southwest region, has contributed to at least 2/3 of the world culinary scene. So part of my focus is to educate people, because when you ask somebody what they think Southwestern Native American cuisine is, usually you get your responses like, well, one time I went to summer camp and we crushed up a bunch of acorns and we ate that, and that's what I think cuisine is. And it's absolutely not. So we're working very hard to educate people. We're just kind of seeing now a renaissance in contemporary Native cuisine, and you're going to start seeing Native American chefs coming onto the global scene, especially through the work of chefs like Nephi Craig at the Sunrise Resort on the Apache Reservation. He's been developing programs for a few years now, and he's actually the director of the Native American Culinary Association. So he's doing a tremendous amount in educating.
And it's good to start seeing stuff like that pop up again, because it's kind of like you said, I really liked your story about creating your own opportunity, because growing up on the reservation, not a lot of it, you don't really have a lot of opportunity given to you. So for Native American cuisine to be sort of becoming a little bit more widespread, I think that's an avenue for lots of people to explore.
Absolutely,
that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. 10, 15 years ago, you never really considered being a chef as an option. You really didn't. So that now that they have the opportunity, and there are even culinary schools in Phoenix that focus specifically on Native American cuisine, and you get a degree in it, that's amazing to me.
Do you have any menu items that are planned for the summer?
Actually, this is a good time to mention this. We're moving in a little bit of a different direction. We want to go a little bit lighter. A lot of the foods we have now are very heavy. We want to go a little bit lighter, introduce some new things. Quinoa is really popular right now, but that's also native to the Americas. We're going to be adding some fish dishes. We've been trying some salmon dishes, and we'd like to add a buffalo burger and we're hoping that that's going to be a good seller. The buffalo, of course, is a lean meat. It's a lot healthier. We'd like to start offering some healthier versions of the food. So we're in the process of revamping not only the menu, but the interior and the website.
Cool.
We grew a little faster than we anticipated, and we've gone through changes, and we're just trying to keep up with the demand and the popularity. We're very grateful for it, of course, but it's kind of slowed things down, where some of the things we wanted to do in the beginning we weren't able to, we'll be able to do those things now.
Well, that's good to hear that you're kind of having some time to progress and evolve a little bit. That's awesome. But back to culturally, what are some of the culinary demands in our national food culture that like Native American food can satisfy? Because I think there's definitely a niche for Native American food. What do you think about that? What do you think, how can it satisfy that?
I think I can speak more regionally. Utah, I guess on a global scale, you would say Utah is part of the Southwest. Yet when you come to Utah, you don't really get the Southwest experience. So, and I can say, like, we visited places on the East Coast, Manhattan. When we get people coming to the Sheep from the East Coast, they're always just blown away. They don't have anything like it anywhere. So I think our contribution would just be really a different take on what you're used to Southwestern food being, places like Chili's.
Right. That's a good example. Yeah, that's what we tend to think Southwestern food is.
Right.
But yeah,
it's really not.
Right.
And we just opened a taqueria, Blue Poblano in Provo. And I've had really interesting conversations about why did I open a Mexican food place? And then when they come eat and they said, well, we really can't pigeonhole you as being Mexican food. And you're really not American, new American, Mexican. What are you? And the phrase that I came up with was just the closest I could come is, well, we're Southwestern Native American with colonial influence, because that's basically what it is. I mean, all the vegetables we're using, not necessarily all of the meat, but most of them, they were already here. They're just being used in different ways than maybe we had done years and years ago. But that's what the culinary process is. It's experiments and research and learning new techniques and learning new ways to express yourself through food. And that's really what our chef does, is expressing himself through food. And I think he's doing a great job.
The Black Sheep Cafe is located at 19th North University Avenue in downtown Provo. For more information on the cafe, visit them online at facebook.com/Black Sheep Cafe. The national parks, besides being beautiful places to visit year-round all over the country, are also an indie folk band based right out of Provo, Utah. They used to be called Brady Parks and the Indians in 2011, and they released a full-length album under that name back in 2012 called The Mossy Mountain. The group changed their name earlier this year and have been working on a new full-length album due out later this year. Under that new name, the National Parks, we're going to play a song called Wind and Anchor.
How I long for the wind. It was here and blew away, and like an anchor in the sand, I was forced to stay. Don't leave me like this, don't leave me like this. I belong to you. Ooh, don't leave me like this, don't leave me like this. I belong to you.
Boy, I'll sweep you off your feet. yes I do.
The National Parks will be playing the next Rooftop Concert Series show on July 5th, opening for Get Off of My Cloud, The Songs of the Rolling Stones. That's one of those awesome supergroup shows they do down there once a year. The show is free and open to the public, located on top of the downtown Provo parking terrace. Well worth a visit. For more information on the National Parks, visit them online at whoarethenationalparks.com. When it comes to grassroots theater, it doesn't come much more grassroots than the Echo Theater in downtown Provo. The actual theater space took over an abandoned storefront on University Avenue, which had previously been home to a skate shop, a comic book shop, a hardcore music venue, and turned it into a fully functional theater. They're an independent company based right there in Provo, producing both familiar favorites and original scripts from local writers. They also have improv showcases and theater competitions for the public to join in. Slug writer Blake Lazinski sat down with the founder Jeffrey Blake to talk about the theater and their current season.
Kind of talk to us for a second about how the Echo Theater came together.
Well, last year in January, I got married January 21st, and then for a long time we've been practicing this play called The Woman in Black. And our original intention was to do it at this old, big house on Center Street. And for several reasons, that fell through, like city ordinance, things like that. And so we were suddenly found ourselves scrambling to find a location to do that. And I have walked by this building, 145 North University Avenue, between Velour and Muse Music for years. And I've seen it. And I thought, man, that is a great location for something, you know? Something should be done there. And so as I was scrambling, trying to find a location, I immediately thought of this place. And I looked inside and it was pretty beat up. The walls were pretty, you know, they're covered in graffiti, so many things. And so I said to the owner, I said, hey, you know, we'd love to have the space for our play. If you let us have it for a month or two, we'll fix the place up a little bit. We'll make it feel, look nice, and, you know, we'll leave it better than we found it. And so we did the play. It was a great success and all that stuff. And we got done. We're like, you know what? We got to keep doing this. This is something we've always wanted to do. We've always wanted to do plays. We've always wanted to have a theater or a creative center for the projects that we want to do, and other people can come in and do projects as well. So that's kind of like how the theater came about. It was kind of like, hey, we like this. We should keep doing this.
Right, and we were kind of talking about this earlier, but what's so special about a place like Provo for a theater like this?
You know, there's a lot of things happening in Provo right now. There's like the Google Fiber coming in. There's all these amazing bands that are coming out of Provo. All this stuff. You got some great, talented filmmakers in here. There's so many talented people you see all the time on reality television, things like that, that you're like, oh, man, why is this little town in Utah, in the mountains of Utah, producing so many great, great things? I've often been obsessed with Austin, Texas, like with wanting to move there because I felt like, oh, that's a creative mecca, there's a great film industry there. And over the last month or so, I've heard people say like numerous times, like, well, Provo's going to be like the new Austin. And I'm like, whether or not that's true, it was too much of a coincidence for me to be like, you know, it's pretty amazing. I think Provo is going to be a town like that, you know, where it's going to be one of these very cool Renaissance towns where a lot of cool stuff is happening.
And I agree completely. You see a lot of great things happening here. Besides that, what are a few maybe challenges theater like this, the small theater, the independent theater, the theater that doesn't exactly fit the cookie cutter productions, things like
right.
that that's normally in Provo?
Well, anytime you hear the words independent theater, you know that's going to be associated with a lot of money coming in. That's me being sarcastic. You know, so there's obviously that challenge. You want to be, you know, everyone's always like, we should have this theater where we do this stuff. And, like, a lot of times the last thing that gets thought of is, like, how are we going to support that, you know? So I think that was one of our big concerns, was trying to find the support. And luckily it was a time where things worked out pretty well financially. It was like, we were pretty smart. We between, you know, my brother-in-law, Matt Bolter, is a guy who, like, knows how to build anything. And we have all these tools that we have. And we had so many friends who were so talented with construction and painting and business and things like that, so that everything kind of came together, and we had this kind of hippie commune of like good feelings coming together and building this theater. So it really helped a lot. But yeah, there are a lot of like obstacles that happen when you're trying to build an independent theater. And luckily we're working right now to get nonprofit status, and hopefully that will help support us carry us on for a few more years to come at least. So
for somebody who hasn't been to the theater here, hasn't been to a show, explain the typical vibe here when you come to an Echo show.
Well, I've heard this numerous times, whether people know that I've heard it or not. I've heard, man, you walk into this place and you think, what is going to happen here? It's kind of a little scary. Like, I don't think it's too scary, but, you know, you walk in, like, it was kind of a weird space, and I wasn't really sure what was going to happen, but when I left, I was very pleased with what we'd seen, and, like, it was so much better than I thought it was going to be. And I always kind of, like, I hear that backhanded kind of compliment a lot, and I go, okay, well, we're working on the space, we're working on it, like, looking better, and I think, you know, it's like, for me, it's like Mexican food places. It's like, you go to, like, the worst hole-in-the-wall Mexican food place, and you're like, oh, this looks a little sketchy. And you eat the Mexican food, and you're like, man, this is the best Mexican food I've ever had. Like, why would I want to go to Taco Bell
right. When
I could have this place that, you know. That's our goal. We want to be the best hole-in-the-wall Mexican food place as far as theater goes in Provo. So, yeah, that's kind of our goal. And we try to do that by doing plays that don't get seen very often, but also kind of hit that sweet spot between, like, commerce and art, where it's like, this is a really good play, but it's also going to bring people in.
Right.
So it's got a lot of artistic merit, but it's also entertaining. That's the goal that we have here.
Speaking of those productions, how do you guys normally choose your productions?
We have a dartboard. No, honestly, it's seriously kind of random. I try to look for new plays that are like maybe just fresh out of New York, that are like, oh, they've got a good following there, like they're you know, they're moving west. And for example, we're doing the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee coming up, which is a musical. It's kind of a mix of improv and fun stuff that has been really popular for the last 4 or 5 years in New York. And we started with The Woman in Black, which is a play that's been running in the West End in Britain for 25 years, I don't know the number. A super popular play that not a lot of people here know about. I mean, they know the Daniel Radcliffe movie, but they don't necessarily know, like, the play. And so those are the kind of plays we like to do, like, new stuff or maybe stuff that's a little underrated, you know. And then every now and then we're just doing a play that hasn't been done around here very often, like Steel Magnolias. We're doing that one, which is a real crowd pleaser that everyone can enjoy.
Yeah, talk about that one for a little bit.
Sure.
What's it been like kind of taking on this kind of timeless story that everybody knows from the movie and all that sort of stuff? What's it been like taking that on?
It's been fun. It's definitely a woman's play.
Yeah.
Well, I shouldn't say that. It's a play that I actually love it. I love the play. I saw it in college, and I thought, oh, this is kind of, I'm here with a date. This is kind of a, you know, it appears to be a woman's play on the surface, but when you get in, you'll just see that this is, like, a really great story about people with, like, real things happening to them. No, it's going to be so entertaining. We've got a great cast, we've got a great director, and a great space, and so I think people are going to love this play.
You have Steel Magnolias. You talked about the Putnam County Spelling Bee.
Mm-hmm.
What are a few other productions you guys are looking forward to?
We're actually doing our zombie puppet masterpiece in November and December called Zuppets. That is about a town that inexplicably turns into zombies, and they're also puppets, so...
Is that like live actors playing puppets?
It's, no. It's okay. It's puppets. It's okay. Real puppets, yeah. That would be creepy. it's my puppet extraordinaire friend, Dallin Blankenship, one of the most artistically talented people I've ever met, is going to be building. He's built a ton of puppets and he's done all this kind of stuff. And my wife is writing the music for it, Juliana Blake, very talented musician. So yeah, we've got some really great stuff coming with that. And then in October, I should mention, we're going to be doing something it's called The Haunted Echo right now, which is basically, it's a mix of a play and a haunted house. So you'll be moving through the theater and each room will have like a new kind of element of the story, but there's
awesome.
Also kind of chills and thrills coming through that. So that's part of the thing we're doing as well.
When's that Zuppets thing going down?
That'll be November and December. It'll be running for like a month or so.
Yeah.
November, December.
Sounds like a riot.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
How can people audition for these shows?
We have open auditions, and they're posted on our website. So if you go to the auditions section of our website, they should be there. And we're actually holding auditions in the next week or so for Putnam County Spelling Bee. In the next week and a half, we'll be having auditions for that.
Very cool. And
those will be posted on our website.
I was looking around on your website, and it said you guys had your 10-minute play festival coming up. How do people get involved with that? Talk a little bit about that.
The Echo 10, it's 10-minute play festival. We did it last year to like a smallish crowd, but a really rousing success for people in the community. A lot of the writers and actors and directors from around here were involved with it, and it was a really big success. It was a great way to meet a lot of cool people, and this year we'll be doing that in August. We're taking submissions right now on our website, and we'll be taking those for another month or so, and then we'll start practicing stuff in July, and then we'll have the festival.
What do we have to look forward to from the Echo, not in the months to come, but as it grows and as you guys kind of get your space the way you want it and all that sort of thing, what can we look forward to in the years to come from here?
Only hope to get better. I personally feel like our plays, they're at a level of quality that is really entertaining, and we want to bring everything up to the level of our plays. We want to bring our facilities up. We've got great new chairs that are comfortable, that people are checking out, better than the white plastic folding chairs that we had when we first started. And, you know, we want to improve our education programs. We're going to be having a lot of programs. We have an improv class actually coming up next week. Starts Wednesday at 6 at the Echo, which is teaching the fundamentals of improv. You know, we've got so many great things. We've got our Cinematics, which is our improv troupe that is, it's the magic of Hollywood. It kind of embodies that. And I just can't say enough about the things we're doing right here. So it's going to be great.
The Echo Theater is located at 145 North University Avenue between Muse Music Cafe and Velour Live Music Gallery. Currently, they're running a production of Steel Magnolias through July 6th, and they will follow that by the 10-minute play festival starting on August 1st and running through the 3rd. For more information on the theater, tickets, and for showtimes, visit them online at theechotheater.com. This is your weekly daily calendar for the week of June 25th through July 1st. Holy shit, July 1st. Can you believe that, people? As always, you'll want to check out slugmac.com every day of your week. Check out the new listings that are going in there all the time. Everything from music to action sports, little theater, all kinds of goodies. I check it every day myself. And of course, you can put your own events in there. That's free. And for a mere $5 a month or $50 for the year, you can add some quality content to your links. I perused this week and found a lot of goodies that I'll be hitting up that week. It's going to be a busy one. On Tuesday, the 25th of June, a divisive force in the pop culture universe. Yes, it's Zooey Deschanel's band. She and Him. I personally like and I rely really on M. Ward's awesome guitar playing in that band. He is one of my favorites when he does solo things. I don't mind having that kind of cool old school girl group sound that She and Him have. And Tilly and the Wall should be a fine opener up at Red Butte Garden. A little bit of a different vibe for Red Butte too, so that should be a fun show. Wednesday, the 26th of June, it is the opening of Saturday's Voyeur at the Salt Lake Acting Company. I heartily encourage anyone to check this out. If you don't think you like theater, this is the kind of show that could change your mind. It's sort of a musical satire of Utah's political and religious communities. You can bring your own booze, sit there, cabaret style, drink up, and enjoy a totally raucous night at the theater. It's one of those things that definitely makes you feel part of a community here in Salt Lake City and in Utah. Also that night, it is the beginning of Crucial Fest, which of course is happening all over town, all through the weekend. You want to check out the different spots, Kilby Court, Woodshed, the Shred Shed. There are shows all through the weekend. It's going to be awesome. Lots of local stuff, great music throughout the weekend with that. Camera Obscura, Scottish indie pop, straight out of Glasgow, Scotland. Their new album came out in early June called Desire Lines. They're a fine band. They're also playing on the 26th. That's at the Urban Lounge. On Friday, the 28th, if you need a little hardcore in your life, MD DC. God, those guys are a serious throwback to when I used to go to the Speedway. They're playing with Verbal Abuse, Hand to Capitalist, In Defense, All Systems Fail, all of them at Burt's Tiki Lounge. Go down, get a thrash on, should be a blast. Same night over at the Urban Lounge, it's the Pink Lightning CD release party. I'm so excited these guys have a new record. It's called Breakers. They're playing with Tupelo Moan, and Eli Morrison and Bad Brad are the guys from Pink Lightning. I've been waiting for this one for a while. Very excited. You probably caught our feature on them on a recent episode. Also, J. William Henderson and Isaac Russell playing at Velour Live Music Gallery down there too, the Provo, where we've been talking about this whole episode. That's on Friday the 28th as well. The 29th of June, the Vans Warped Tour. I know a few of you will be out there. You know, I look at the list of bands this year, nothing really jumped out, but it's always a pretty good time to go cruise the Utah State Fair Park, buy some, you know, obnoxious gear, some t-shirts, whatnot, sweat your balls off, not have any beer, you know how it goes. It's an institution, and Salt Lake's actually always one of the most popular spots on the tour, population-wise, so it's an institution, might as well check it out. Sunday the 30th of June, one of my favorites, Jonathan Richman, oh, such a cool guy, playing at Kilby Court. For those of you who don't know, he played the troubadour in There's Something About Mary, the guy wandering around singing little tunes. Also does great songs like Roadrunner, awesome show for sure. Same night over at the Stateroom, Sally Ford and the Sound Outside, a fine female-led alt-country band. Saw them just a few months ago at the Urban Lounge, put on a great show. Excited to see what they can do in a bigger room with a stellar sound system. That is your weekly daily calendar. As always, be sure to check slugmag.com every damn day of the week for new stuff, new things going on. It's July, people. Hard to believe. Officer Jenny, besides having a fine band name, considering it's actually a solo project of Stephen Cope working with a bunch of random people, has probably the best album title I've heard in a long time. This new one is called The Gods Must Be Giddy, a gaggle of unexceptional songs written for unexceptional people. I guess that's us. It was released just here in May. We're going to play a song off of that awesomely titled new album. This is a song called Sandcastle Dove.
Drawn. I stumbled onto the dewy lawn. My hues had faded from years long gone. My feet had smeared and bled. But I was home. I'd fallen far to the leaves below. And you were heaven sent virtuous. So you paint me red. Sandcastle dove erected in my own backyard. Of the ones you meant to leave me scarred. Sandcastle dove, awake me as the sun inflates. My final love, sandcastle dove. I'm content. It's on the broken when I first went to the open, the lines were bent. I never overhead, but they had taste. I constructed of scraps absence haste. When uninvited and glumly chased, as all my lovers laugh. Sandcastle dove erected in my own backyard. Tell tales of the ones who meant to leave me scarred. Sandcastle dove, awake me as the sun inflates. My final love, sandcastle dove. Sandcastle dove, erected in my own backyard. Tell tales of the ones who meant to leave me scarred. Sandcastle dove, awake me as the sun inflates. My final love, sandcastle dove.
For more information on Stephen Cope, on Officer Jenny, and Stephen's various other projects that he's always working on, visit him online at facebook.com/StephenCopeIsOfficerJenny. The all-ages music venue located in downtown Provo that we affectionately know as Velour, or the Velour Live Music Gallery, has made quite a name for itself recently, thanks to bands coming out of Provo and making a splash on the national scene. I'm talking about Fictionist, Neon Trees, Joshua James. The place opened in 2006 and was originally founded by Corey Fox, an audio engineer who had previously worked at Muse Music, just down the block from the place. Since its opening, it's really become the hub of the Provo music scene, and slug writer Blake Lazinski sat down with Velour's PR director, Kenesha Johnson, to talk about the venue and its impact on the fair city of Provo.
For those who haven't been to Velour, explain what kind of the vibe of a show is.
You know, the general vibe of Velour is more than just what is going on musically. Like, we really put a lot of emphasis on atmosphere and, you know, the aesthetic. Corey, you know, deck the place out. I think it's one of the most unusual venues of its size and genre, probably regionally. I think it kind of stands out for a lot of those reasons. What's great is that every night is a different show here. So sometimes it could be some young up-and-coming band, sometimes it could be some really cool, legit all-star locals, some bigger names that are local but national artists. One of my favorite aspects is that it's an all-ages venue, which means people, you know, there's always going to be a percentage of people that come to be social, but for the most part, people come just to listen to great music. And it kind of just sets an audience apart, sets an experience apart. We have a lot of people that are always, like, thanking us for shushing, you know, that one guy or one gal in the crowd
right.
who seems to be talking really loudly or standing out from what's going on with the rest of the room. We like people to be able to come here and experience the show, not just show up. So whatever we can do to help increase that, you know, we're definitely on board. Corey will go all out and dress the place up and sometimes build entire sets for shows. I can't think of any other venue that does anything like that.
Yeah.
And on nights where it's, yeah, we're not going all out like that, we still try to put in 100% and give the show, you know, our best effort to make sure everyone's enjoying themselves. So,
kind of speaking of the crowd, what would you say kind of the demographic is here at Velour?
I mean, obviously, we're in the epicenter of a major college town. We've got two universities immediately surrounding us and several others within short driving distance, a lot of high schools. So we definitely get the 15 to 30 crowd as major attendees. But there's a lot of bands that are actually, you know, developing cross-genre music. And they're because of that, they're bringing in crowds that are kind of across a lot of demographics. So it's not just teenagers showing up or not just college students. We're getting a lot of 30 plus, 40 plus, sometimes the 50 plus.
Right.
One of my favorite crowds is for Fictionist.
Fictionist is a great band.
Yeah, they're such a cool band, and they're so classic rock inspired. And so not only are they a thrill, you know, younger fans, you know, older fans that have experienced music in different generation love them too. So that's just kind of an example of what we like to see here. But for the most part, I'd say our immediate demographic is definitely, you know, college bound. So,
how long have you worked with Corey here?
It's been about 4.5 years.
4.5 years. So how do you think the music scene here in Provo has changed since you started here?
You know, it's funny, Velour, we just celebrated our 7th anniversary being open this year in January. And coming into Velour 4.5 years ago, I was so behind the game. Like, all this entire history had happened before I was a part of anything or knew anybody. And even today, I'm still like, okay, who's this person? What's their history? What did they used to do? What were they known for? One thing that I've come to realize, like, I've been here longer than Velour was open by the time I showed up. So right. History has happened and been made here. The scene evolves, and I often say whatever is trending nationally is usually trending here in a smaller music scene first, not just here in Provo, but I'm sure in other places too. But we're definitely going to reflect what's going on nationally. So there was definitely, as I came in, it was probably in the middle of like the Americana rock phase, and still one of my favorite genres of music. I think one of the most classically inspired and timeless genres for sure. And while that's still a heavy influence around here, I've seen that genre change and develop into a heavy bluegrass band-based situation. We have rock bands that are changing, you know, into different genres and kind of developing more experimental rock, and a lot of electronic based stuff has come out the last couple years. And as you're seeing nationally, that's a really big impact on music that's doing really big on the mainstream level too. So really what goes on here is the same that goes on anywhere else,
right.
And oftentimes first.
Speaking of first, you talked about Fictionist.
Mm-hmm.
There's bands like Desert Noises, who I know has played with you guys for a few times, and a lot of other just really high quality bands that are coming through here. Do you think Provo and Utah County, and really specifically Provo, is kind of in like a golden age kind of in music right now?
You know, we talk about that a lot, about like what the music scene maybe was 20 years ago or 10 years ago. And I think it's grown and developed into something that is more supportive of the music community. I don't want to say golden age. I feel like that might put a jinx on how long it lasts or something. But I don't think it has a clock on it.
Right.
I think it's just beginning, to tell you the truth. And we see a lot of bands that are in their early stages. And looking back, I mean, Desert Noises started here when they were in high school. And they've been playing this community since then, and Velour's been their home, and like even their genre has slightly changed, and they've grown and developed, and it's like all those bands are gonna continue to grow and develop, and sometimes they get too big for Provo, they get too big for the venue, and they have to go on and do bigger, cooler things, but there's gonna be someone else waiting to take their place. And when you have as many bands as we do succeeding at such a main and national level, it's inspiring. And like, we do our Battle of the Bands twice a year, and we can do that because there are new bands developing all the time, and oftentimes really great. So the better our local bands do, the more newer local bands are going to inspire. And I think it's just gonna be a perpetuating machine that's gonna continue to climb, so.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned all the national acts that have kind of blown up, and a lot of them played right here on this stage.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately you think of Neon Trees.
Of course, yeah.
Imagine Dragons, you know, bands like that have a lot of their roots here in Provo. Why do you think there's such a disproportionate amount of big bands coming out of this area?
You know, that's the age-old question, and is it Salt Lake versus Provo? And it's not versus ever, you know,
right.
But it just is happening here. That's just how it's working. I think a lot of it contributes specifically, I mean, I know I work with Velour, and this is my, you know, my love as much as it is anything, but it's not my baby, it's Corey's baby. I think it has a lot to do with Corey's vision and ability and the space he's created here. One thing that he always says is like, a band is only gonna be as great as the space you give them to play in. And that's why it's really important for us to focus on developing a quality space, motivating and teaching the band how to be bigger and better. You know, that creates that environment for them to grow. And I don't know of any other venues that are that hands-on with the music community. I think that's really what it comes down to. And Corey's inspired other organizations and the Rooftop Concert Series and things like that. And it's just creating a bigger community for people to succeed here and giving them place to do that. And, you know, I would say, like, I could say this, but I don't know the numbers, but I would love to see someone put the numbers together. When we're thinking of major music hotspots in the country, and you think of, like, bands that are coming out of there, I would say Seattle, Portland, LA, San Francisco, Provo, Brooklyn, Austin.
Right.
Those are the places. Provo is in that mix.
It blows my mind. I agree completely.
I would beg to differ that ratio-wise, Provo is the top of that list.
Kind of shifting gears here, a lot of people look at Provo, and we were kind of talking about it earlier, but like from the outside looking in, they look at it kind of like a black hole of culture, like there's nothing going on here. Why are they wrong?
I think the reason why they're wrong,
right.
It is happening here. If they're not seeing it, it's because they're not looking, and the truth is, in this day and age, the city of Provo has never been more exciting. And what's really great is that, like, the mayor and the mayor's office, they're so on board with all the art community events going on right now, super supportive of Velour. And in the past, we've had a lot of smaller organizations just trying to make things work in Provo and get things started and turn it back to the art town it was, like, turn of the century.
Right.
But all those groups are just ahead of their time. And now that the city kind of is locked in and understands what's happening here and understands the benefit it's having on the city economically and helping put Provo on the map and things like that, there's a lot going on here. There's also a lot of great visual artists here that I'm really proud of. And I think this is a community that can continue to grow and thrive. It's difficult because it's a small town. Although it's a lot of small businesses, I don't say there's a lot of money running through this town. But the people are wonderful, and yeah, if you don't see what's going on, it's just because you're not caring to look a little bit or take a minute to hang out. I think there are amazing restaurants in Provo, too.
Oh, I agree. Just down the road.
Yeah.
I count like four or five off the top of my head.
First thing I do, if someone's come down for a show and they're here pretty early before a show starts, I will happily give them some of the best restaurant recommendations for the city. And
Bombay House.
And that's a classic. That's a given.
Right?
yeah. There's definitely a community of people who are caring about quality right now, and I think it's just there's a generation shift going on.
Right.
The late 20s, early 30s are kind of just being assertive and loving their town, loving the mountains, loving the music, loving the businesses, getting inspired, and I've never been prouder to be a part of something like I am the city, so.
No, I agree completely. It's a complete shift of thought here. Why do you think places like Velour and Echo Theater and Muse down the road and all these art galleries and things, why do you think that sort of thing's important in a town like this?
It comes down to something really basic, and whether it's Velour, it's Muse, it's Echo, it's any of the art galleries, none of these spaces are in it for the money. This is not a major city. We're all ages venues. These are not income generating
right.
businesses. It's like even Velour has to get creative to survive the summer months and things like that. Because of that, it means that the people running them are very sincerely committed to their community and what's going on here. And when you have people like that, I think that's where true community concepts thrive. You know, it's really great if you can make a little money in addition to that. That's usually a long-term concept, but really it comes down to, do you care? And nobody wants to be in a community where it's too flashy and things are going on and nobody's really happy. Like, I think we're all poor and really happy about it because we see really, really great results. We're really proud of the way we're doing business here and the way that we're contributing and giving back, so.
You guys have the Battle of the Bands. Of course, you guys have the rooftop concert series every, like, first Friday of every month during the summer months. What are some other things you guys have coming up, some big events or things that you want me to plug?
For Velour, we actually have a packed month for the month of June. We also take 2 weeks off in July. So we try to enjoy that time in the summer. We have a lot of small touring bands coming through we're excited about. We encourage people to stay interactive on our Facebook page and like our Instagram account, things like that. Really helps us stay in touch with people and kind of find out what's going on. But the biggest parties happen come September too. There's a lot of huge album releases coming
right.
up in September. A lot of album releases in June too, so a lot to look forward to.
Velour is located at 135 North University Avenue in beautiful downtown Provo. It's an all-ages venue, and showtimes usually start right around 8 p.m. For more information on Velour, including an upcoming schedule, visit them online at velourlive.com. Thanks for listening to Soundwaves from the Underground, and for all things Slug Magazine, be sure to visit us all the damn time at slugmag.com. We have Jeffrey Stedman from Yelp coming back into the studio next week to talk about Tibetan food here in Salt Lake City, and we'd like to hear what your favorite places are to grab a bite of that rare treat here in our fair capital city. You can either send us an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com or call and leave us a message on our automated voicemail line at 858-233-9324. That line is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and we could really use the tips because we love us some Tibetan food. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and produced by Gavin Sheehan. The associate producers are Esther Moronio, Alexander Ortega, and myself, Dan Nalen. Executive producer is Angela H. Brown. The theme was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis. The main logo and art design are by T. Doan, and the technical design by Kate Colgan. Be sure to tune us in next week when we'll talk to the fellows from Holy Water Buffalo. We'll have Jeffrey Stebbin from Yelp, and we'll talk to the good people from Farm Forward. Thank you for listening.